Start 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. One of the biggest movie stars of all time, Robert Redford, has died. His agent says the 89-year-old died in his sleep at his home in the mountains outside Provo, Utah. Among Redford's biggest films, 1969's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, 1973's The Sting, and Memory. He starred opposite Barbara Streisand in The Way We Were.
Everything happens so fast. Shoot it all in one day, live, on the air, everybody running around, a constant state of panic. You remember how it was in the radio.
All the President's Men, released in 1976.
All we've got are pieces. We can't seem to figure out what the puzzle is supposed to look like. John Mitchell resigns as the head of Creep and says that he wants to spend more time with his family.
His credits also include The Sting. He founded the Sundance Film Festival. Again, Robert Redford dead at the age of 89. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. A group of legislators gathered in Tolma late last week to discuss expanding Braille services between Minneapolis and Chicago. Tolma Mayor Paul Dwyer said the group discussed both cargo and passenger Braille, with the focus being more on increasing the ability to move people.
The focus was on passenger rail mostly. There was people from Fort McCoy who were very supportive of rail service because that's how they're looking at moving a lot of their troops now.
Fort McCoy is the largest military base in the state, and Tolma sits between Fort McCoy and the Air National Guard base just a few miles to the east.
So this is huge for Tolma, being right between two major military installations, being Volk Field in Camp Douglas and Fort McCoy at Sparta.
Tolma had been selected to receive grant funds from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act back in 2009. That project was suspended in 2010 by former Governor Jim Doyle before he left office.
If this rail project goes through this time, I think it can be a great catalyst for being able to promote our downtown, bring more people into our downtown. We've seen other communities that have benefited from, you know, more rail activity in their community.
That's Tina Thompson. She's president and CEO of the Tolma Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center.
The nice thing about our downtown being so close to the Amtrak station is that it makes it walkable. Everything is within, all of our shops are within like a mile.
The alternative of relying on a car for transportation is something Stevens Point representative Vinnie Moresi is on board for. He told the Wisconsin Examiner he would like to see rail service connecting Stevens Point and other central Wisconsin communities to other major cities already on the route. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Badgers back in Madison. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, college football. The Wisconsin Badgers home this Saturday against the Maryland Terrapins. Wisconsin now 2-1 after their loss in Alabama over the weekend. Baseball, yesterday we told you Brewers manager Pat Murphy read a letter he said was from Bob Uecker to the team after they clinched the spot in the playoffs. Turns out it was another practical joke. Murphy now clarifies he wrote the letter all along, not Bob.
And it's just a way to honor the man, you know, and kind of put together some words that the players could resonate with, you know, things that he was about, because he's a big part of this thing. And I thought it would be a nice gesture to keep him involved. We brought the picture of him celebrating with us. And, you know, it was really about honoring him. And nobody believed in their right mind that, you know, he could produce a letter like that at this time, but his spirit is with us.
That's Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm today. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 80s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to 61 for a low. Tomorrow, another sunny, warm day with a high right around 85. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness. A powerful run to the house.
Wells.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. It's the Big Ten opener against the Maryland Terrapins. Our coverage begins at 9 a.m.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Looking pressured and sacked.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, Susan Kearns from Milwaukee Film joins me to talk about a really sweet event. Then renowned Milwaukee-based singer-songwriter Trapper Shep joins me and shares his amazing music. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on a Tuesday morning, September 16th, 8:06 the time. Cam Stevenson is standing by from Courier Newsroom, live from the nation's capital to talk about recent events, which could have something to do with avoiding a government shutdown, could have something to do with the trade war, could have something to do with fighting inflation, but instead the theme is vengeance. And we will get into that in just a little bit. Then Dan Schaefer in our next half hour from the Recombobulation area and Civic Media political editor, talking about the growing candidate field for governor for 2026. But first, let's get a quick update on the forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, who joins us to talk about how there is some thunder in the north central part of the state, but that is not going to be the case around the rest of the state. It's just summer
yeah,
again.
It really is.
We're digging.
Gorgeous.
That. Yeah.
The only things we have to deal with, like you said, is those few scattered showers and storms up towards Phillips, Park Falls, Amahawk, Minocqua area. Otherwise, foggy conditions by the Great Lakes, Superior, Sheboygan, even Manitowoc. You're seeing some dense fog off the lake. Otherwise, super sunny as we go through the afternoon. Highs in the mid-80s. We're going to put that on repeat again tomorrow. We could have some isolated spotty showers and storms spark in the early evening tomorrow. And then we could see some more storms up north on Thursday. But otherwise, the rest of the state still holding muggy and warm and still into those mid-80s for the entire week, basically, until we start to cool down into the weekend and more rain starts to roll our way with a big system.
Oh, no. It just occurred to me. First day of fall is coming up before too much longer, isn't it?
Monday, the 22nd.
Oh, what are we doing here?
In second summer right now. We can't have fall.
Right. Let's see. On the text line from Tom in Hartford, is Eagle River going to get some rain?
Oh, yeah. Just a little bit of sprinkles. Looks like it's headed your way. Doesn't look like the storms will, though.
All right. There you go. How's that for spot forecasting right there? Huh? All right, Brittany. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
You're welcome.
All right. Remember, you can sign up for our newsletters, upnorthnewswi.com. And Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom that is filled with state outlets and newsletters and podcasts. And one of those newsletters is Below the Beltway. Cam Stevenson puts it together from Capitol Hill. Head to couriernewsroom.com or beltway.news to learn more. Cam Stevenson joins us now from Washington, D.C. Cam, how are you?
Hey, Pat, I'm doing all right. I was actually wondering if Brittany had a text line I could call in case so I can check and see if it rains before I wash my car.
She probably could do that for you. I'll get you guys set up. Yeah, we do the personalized forecast here on demand. Full service is what we're up to here. So this week we have spent a lot of time, well, Friday and then Monday and then again today, talking about Congressman Derek Van Orden from Western Wisconsin, who arguably, because I can't track all the members of Congress, but I would contend arguably has done more than any other member in terms of threatening behavior, insulting behavior, obscene behavior. But I know he's not alone. And I know that starts not only at the top with Donald Trump's rhetoric, but you had the Vice President of the United States, J.D. Vance, doing Charlie Kirk's former radio show live from his government office. He had Stephen Miller on. And so between all of those guys and the folks you cover on Capitol Hill, it sure seems like the theme this week has been vengeance.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're 100% right. They are, I guess, invoking Reagan's trickle down theory of vengeance, where it starts at the top. The president of the United States has said some very incorrect things about what happened to Charlie Kirk, about how he died, who killed him. And that's just kind of been trickling down ever since. J.D. Vance, he had a broadcast from the White House talking about leftist violence, which isn't really a thing, especially compared to far-right violence. And now we're seeing, well, now as in the past 3 days and since late last week, people like Representative Van Orden who are turning this into a battle cry. When you said he was tweeting a lot, I thought, oh, okay, this guy's, he's posting some stuff online. He's saying some, whatever. He's doing his thing. But I was scrolling through his feed, and I don't know if he has slept in the past 72 hours. He is on constant watch trying to get people fired for using their First Amendment rights. And it seems like, I don't know if he's even in D.C. because it seems like that's his full-time job right now.
We stopped counting at 550, and there have clearly been many more tweets since that time, but it's not fair to any intern or anything to make them count it up. So we've seen it from the president, the vice president, this member of Congress. I know other members of Congress as well. Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee was, putting up other people's posts calling for them to be fired. And so I don't doubt that that's still the theme on Capitol Hill, but it begs the question, they have an actual job that doesn't involve violating people's First Amendment rights. Are we not getting closer to a government shutdown and the need for Republicans to probably need Democratic votes to pass a budget?
Yeah, I feel like we have entered some bureaucratic version of Groundhog Day where nearly every day you wake up and there's another government shutdown coming down the pike. But yeah, the last reconciliation bill was not long term. It was through September. It's mid-September now. And I have heard very little about budget negotiations, but that is an important part of getting a budget passed, is actually meeting members of Congress, legislating, discussing, negotiating, and compromising, which I think is going to be the hardest part, because so far under Trump's second term, Republicans in Congress seem not only allergic, but disgusted by the idea of compromise.
Yes. And there was a report yesterday that the president was telling congressional Republicans to cut Democrats out of any negotiations. And look, from a coaching standpoint, I guess you could see the logic in that, is to say, look, gang, you've got the majority. If you all hang together, you can pass anything you want. But they have proven year after year after year after year, they cannot all hang together. They end up needing Democratic votes to pass something. So cutting Democrats out doesn't sound like a great idea, especially when you have these Affordable Care Act premium subsidies that were put in place during the Biden administration getting set to expire. And you had Speaker of the House Mike Johnson yesterday saying, yeah, keeping those subsidies from expiring, that's not really a priority for us right now. That's a heck of a thing for the Speaker of the House to say, is it? It really doesn't matter to us if everybody's health insurance costs go up.
Yeah, well, and especially after they did something even apparently even worse than compromising, which is they were able to agree on a budget a few months ago that is cutting health care for millions of people. And now that they're talking about getting rid of ACA subsidies, and I mean, just the idea of saying, we're going to cut millions of people off of healthcare, and now we're going to cut more funding for healthcare, all the while billionaires are paying less in taxes than ever before, is absurd. And it's, to throw this back at Speaker Johnson, it's an immoral way to legislate, where you value someone's bottom line versus over someone's health and their survival.
Well, yeah, and it deals with what's happening here in the real world. We're talking to Cam Stevenson, Courier Newsroom, political correspondent up on Capitol Hill here, about what Congress should be working on versus what they've been doing in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder. We've certainly talked about the shutdown. We've talked about Affordable Care Act subsidy assistance expiring. Agricultural stuff is no longer as sexy on Capitol Hill as it used to be back in olden times, when you can always count on the House and Senate agriculture committees to make a big deal about what happens in rural America. But with Trump's trade war right now, and you have China, which normally purchases about $12 billion worth of soybeans, has not placed a single order yet. I'm sure there's going to be talk about, you know, bailout payments to farmers to try to keep them whole, even though their crops are going to be rotting somewhere, either in the field or in these storage bins all around the country. Have you heard any chatter like that yet, or are they still too focused on the Charlie Kirk murder to think about our farmers?
I haven't heard anything about any bailouts for local farmers. What I personally think would be more likely and more in line with this administration would be an opportunity for large corporate farms to buy these struggling local farms for pennies on the dollar, to create huge conglomerates, to cut down costs for corporations and the wealthy, and not only waste all of that food, you know, that the billions of dollars of soybeans that China's not buying, it's not being sold. So not only is no one buying it, but this is all just going to waste. This is all getting thrown away in the trash while people starve. And so I haven't heard anything about what they want to do to remedy that. And I don't think that is an accident. I think that they have no intention to remedy it.
Which, again, ought to be something that every family farmer across Wisconsin pays attention to and look for any glimmer of hope that they give a damn about what's going to happen to this year's harvest and how it's going to pile up. Now, a lot of this is obviously the environment that it is in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder. And it was, again, a horrific incident that had no justification whatsoever. But there are still these other matters out there, including the case of to what degree Donald Trump was involved with sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein. And in your newsletter, you've talked about ways that the late sexual predator Epstein, you know, how he came to be, you know, funded for all of his many travels and activities. And so this is all to say that you and the folks at Courier Newsroom and elsewhere, you've not taken your eye off the ball, that this Epstein case is still very relevant.
Yeah, not only is it relevant, it honestly ties into what's happening right now perfectly. You know, we keep talking about how there's these, you know, these billionaires who are able to get huge tax breaks, who are able to brazenly, you know, start consolidating even local farms and local produce. This isn't just a blatant money grab that we haven't seen in probably a century. And that's because the wealthy and powerful have been allowed to get emboldened and allowed to get away with so much. And a big part of that is what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, the finances between him and billionaires, you know, like Leon Black, like potentially Donald Trump, like Les Wexler, who founded Victoria's Secret, among other things. These wealthy people, you know, those are the people that we know about. There's dozens, hundreds of other people who paid for services from Jeffrey Epstein, who are now purchasing farms, who are now working in our government, who are able to do these bold things because we've allowed them to get away with so much for so long. And so continuing on that thread and pushing the U.S. Treasury to release the financial information of Jeffrey Epstein so that congressional investigators can actually find out who he was financially tied to and hold them accountable that way, I think is just as important and integral to solving the wealth disparity that we're seeing right now.
Again, you can read more from Cam Stevenson at Below the Beltway. Head over to beltway.news and couriernewsroom.com for more. Cam, appreciate you joining us from DC. Have a great start to your day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we're going to be talking in a bit here to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area with another big name candidate in the Wisconsin governor's race. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Building confidence and changing lives every day. The SWC YMCA is here for your family, located in the heart of Wisconsin Rapids. Welcome fall with a splash by attending the group swimming lessons provided for all ages. It might be cool outside, but it's always warm inside the pool. Go online today at www.swcymca.org for class information and sign up. The SWC YMCA is here for all ages, from youth to silver sneakers, where a healthy way of living is everything the YMCA supports. Come start your health journey together.
You can support your natural defenses, increase wellness, and propel your health to the next level in 100 days. If everyday life is a struggle, you have concerns on viral activity, or need a general shift to greater wellness, visit Family Natural Foods today. All natural products can increase immunity, bolster your first lines of defense, and help you thrive in today's fast-paced world. Enzyme Defense for Immune Health and Mucus Stop for Allergies and Congestion are on sale. Stop in today. See what Family Natural Foods can do for you. West Grand Avenue, Wisconsin Rapids.
To everyone who feels young at heart, come treat yourself to our new cereal concrete mixers at Culver's.
For a limited time, we're blending our creamy, fresh frozen custard with your favorite cereals. Choose from Chocolatey Cocoa Puffs, Magical Lucky Charms, or my favorite, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Stop by Culver's or order ahead in the app or online and feel the joy in every spoonful. From Wisconsin with love.
Welcome to Delicious.
Culver's on 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drugged driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapid Support, proudly brought to you by Crockett Septic for this September 8th, 2025. I have your host, James, here. We're joined right now by our friends from Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Wisconsin. We have Beth Konert with us, Director of Operations. Beth, good to have you with us.
Good to see you.
We were talking in our pregame. It's been too long. It's great to have you back. You know, the door is always open for you guys. Love hearing from you and love being able to inform our audience about the great work you guys are doing over there. Journalistically, I will mention, I was a part of Big Brothers Big Sisters in California, and it was an incredible experience for me, one I never forget. And I am completely biased about this organization. Love the work that you guys are doing. And really do love promoting and talking about this.
One of the many reasons I love coming to visit with you.
One of the things that we want to make sure to cover with this, and well, for you and I, Beth, this is a very familiar topic. We're very familiar with this organization. I want to make sure that everybody out there is on the same page and knows exactly what you are doing over there. So we talk about the mission a little bit of Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Absolutely. So Big Brothers Big Sisters is the oldest and largest one-to-one youth mentoring organization in our country. Last year, we celebrated nationwide our 120th anniversary, which is awesome. And our overall mission is just to create and support one-to-one mentoring relationships that ignite the power and promise of youth.
You know, we're going to be celebrating our 85th anniversary in November. We thought we were old. We thought, yeah, we're kids compared to you guys.
Yes, you really are. It's really, I mean, you're looking a little spry there.
It's so cool to think of when you think of this program and this group or this organization existing as long as it has. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for history. And a while back, I looked at, well, How long has adoption been around? How long has, you know, things like this, things like that been around? And yeah. It's been around as long as there have been human beings.
Right.
As long as there have been people, there have been people adopting a child or taking a child in or looking after. The term of it takes a village really is about as old as there's been people.
Right. Because truly, as human beings, we need connections. We mm-hmm. need to feel supported and have somebody believing in us and just being by our side.
It also speaks to the importance of these of an organization like this and the importance of that contact, that humanity to it. Mm-hmm. And also a nice reminder with it being September to have you all in, because September in particular.
Yes, September is Big Brothers Big Sisters Month. So we are very fortunate as an organization overall that we get to celebrate a full month of what matters most to us, and that's that everyday mentoring. It's connecting those children that just need a positive role model with someone that can be in their corner and be that defender of potential and just hang out. And it's as simple as really being connected for just 1 hour a week.
Defender of potential is a phrase that I want to be out there all the time. Mm-hmm. I want people to know it like just do it or something like
yes.
that. It's such a great word, a great phrase. It's one in particular I think that almost everybody can adopt and use, whether you are a wannabe or you are a big brother, big sister, or you're a parent, or you are literally a big brother or big mm-hmm. sister or little brother or big sister. It's something that we can all embrace.
Absolutely, because truly at the end of the day, every child has the potential to be successful. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to your point of it taking a village. You we know parents are trying their very best. We know that teachers are doing everything they can to instill great things in our kids. But there's all those other aspects of mm-hmm. just giving a child that one-to-one undivided attention in simple ways like playing a board game, doing a card game, doing an arts and crafts, sitting down and having a conversation, or even just tossing that football around mm-hmm. and being like, hey, did you see that Packer game yesterday? Mm-hmm. Or like, man, what happened there? Mm-hmm. those back and forth conversations of just checking in. And it's truly that simple.
It's important to keep in mind as well with that and everything, and just piggybacking on what you're saying there, Beth, is that children, we hear the phrase all the time, their brains are sponges. Mm-hmm. They truly are taking in all of this.
Everything.
So, how you handle yourself in front of them or the things that you do when you're with them or anything like that are particularly more important sometimes and more than you may realize.
Absolutely.
And that is just another reason why when we talk about an organization like this, and especially in the month of September, where we're really celebrating Big Brothers, Big Sisters and what that means, mm-hmm. literally everybody out there hearing this can be involved.
Everybody, because everybody has some life experience that they can bring to the table. And truly, we match completely based on interests and personality. So like if you're one of those people that loves to build things and put things together and figure it out, we have kids that love to do that too. If you are super active and love to be on the go, we have that. If we have kids that are like super chill and just be like, hey, I just want to hang out and have a conversation, we can match that as well. So there is every aspect that you can imagine, obviously with putting child safety in the forefront as our first and foremost priority.
The young boy that I was lined to with Carlos. He and I was very nervous because I'm like, what if we don't have anything to talk about? Or what if he doesn't like the things I like and stuff? And I didn't realize some of that. Yeah. I had it explained to me. I just had forgotten it because I was so nervous. Carlos wanted to be, and God, I hope he went on to do this, but he wanted to be a dancing magician.
That's awesome.
It's so cool. I'd never heard of it before. We talked, like I would say at least the first half an hour was about that. And then we got talking about me and what I did as an actor right. and all those things. That's why I was out in California. And mm-hmm. it was such a cool experience for both of us. And I'm going to bring this up whenever I can when we're talking about this subject. We are looking out for these kids. We want to help these kids and Absolutely. Give them mentorship, give them life experience, give them a good life moments and everything. But don't miss this part of it, everybody, that it is just as impactful and can mean just as much to the big brother or big sister.
Hands down.
I guarantee you this. Like, it really is.
In all honesty, I am living proof of that because I started as a high school big sister and now many, many years, I won't put a number because that makes me feel very old, but many years ago, I started in that capacity and I loved it so much that it helped me determine what I went to college for. And then I went from being an intern in another Big Brothers Big Sisters affiliate to now getting to sit as director of operations and have pretty much done every role in between that. And, you know, so that's why whenever I try and go into recruitment or talk to somebody about what it means to become a big, you know, I always say, I'm not saying this as director of ops because, yes, I get paid to do that. But I'm saying this as someone who has had two amazing little sisters who I know went on to conquer the world and do amazing and big things. And I got to be just a small piece of that. And that's awesome.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Average gas prices fell 8 cents per gallon over the last week. The average price in the state on Monday, being $2.88, means prices are 3.9 cents higher than a month ago. However, this is still 8.5 cents per gallon lower than this time last year. More states saw decreases than increases last week, and there's good news on the horizon. The transition to cheaper winter gasoline begins on Tuesday across most of the country. Officials at GasBuddy expect average gas prices to continue to decline in the weeks ahead, as long as hurricane season remains quiet. Prices in central Wisconsin range from $2.71 to $2.81 per gallon. Legislation that would require state employees return to office work passes the state assembly. Joanne Kulatz reports.
The bill's author, Pleasant Prairie Republican Amanda Nedweski, says it simply does what Democratic Governor Tony Evers should have required and that the administration has failed to provide sufficient oversight of state employees who began to work remotely during the COVID pandemic. The measure will need to pass the state Senate before going to Evers, would likely veto it.
The chamber also passed legislation aimed at combating sextortion by providing a penalty for sharing representations depicting nudity, restricting the sorts of flags that would be allowed to be displayed at government buildings in Wisconsin, and exempting tobacco bars from the public smoking ban. Archery and crossbow deer hunting seasons opened on Saturday. These two seasons run through January 4th, though certain counties and metro subunits have extended seasons until January 31st. Reminder that all harvested deer must be registered by 5 p.m. the day after recovery. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. If this past weekend box office earnings are any indication, anime has completely arrived. Demon Slayer Infinity Castle found itself at the top of the box office with a $70 million opening weekend. Its opening day take of $33 million was the highest opening ever for an anime film. Last week's number one film, The Conjuring Last Rites, held off three challengers for the number two spot and a take of $26 million. The three new releases include Downton Abbey, which brought in $18 million big ones in its first week of release to finish at number three. The Stephen King-inspired The Long Walk pulled in $11.5 million over the weekend. The film is based on King's first novel of the same title. And in fifth place was sort of a new release, or more accurately, a new re-release, as Toy Story brought in over $3 million on over 200 screens, giving it a massive haul of $195 million dating back about 30 years. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm today. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high in the upper 80s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to 61 for a low. Tomorrow, another sunny, warm day with a high right around 85. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
We want to thank our listeners for following the Rapid Support over to the podcast world. Your growing support for the show and your favorite guests, area nonprofits, is greatly appreciated.
We love getting the word out about the great things nonprofits do for the community. Special thanks to Crockett Septic for sponsoring this show as they continue to help us bring you great conversations.
Listen to the Rapid Support at WFHR.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we discuss the rise in death by suicide rates in Wisconsin and try to look into what the cause and the solution is. Also, the Brewers are back in action. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Milwaukee Brewers are back in action after an off day, starting a three-game series with the Los Angeles Angels tonight, tomorrow night, Thursday night. Coverage begins at 6:05 each evening on Civic Media stations around the network. Head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, to learn more. And while you're online, head over to the Up North News website, upnorthnewswi.com, and sign up for our newsletters, including our Sunday morning newsletter, which features our question of the week. And for that, we'll bring in Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Dan Schaefer, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Mr. Kreitlow. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Fun having you here. Let's get into this. I broke my listeners. I broke some of our newsletter readers in asking the question of the week and the way that I worded it. Now, I know you caught, Dan, last week that Ron Johnson was again encouraging the conspiracy theory that maybe it was more than two planes that brought down the World Trade Center. That may, you know, there's that theory that Building 7 had all these explosives in the basement or something along those lines. And so here he's doing this on the anniversary of 9/11. And I asked in our newsletter, if you could get Ron Johnson to stop talking forever about just one of these conspiracies, what would it be? Option A, the COVID vaccine is dangerous and ivermectin isn't getting used enough because of a conspiracy. B, claims about Russian involvement in the 2016 election on Trump's behalf are part of a conspiracy. C, the 2020 election results are faulty because of some conspiracy when Johnson actually had a potential role in Trump's attempted coup. Option D, the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center involved more than two airplanes and a conspiracy is preventing us from learning more. I ask people to pick one. I cannot tell you how many people have written back in going, I can't pick one. You have to give us an all of the above option. Yeah, folks were not happy about it. Not mad at me, but just like, how do you pick one of these coming from the senior senator from the state of Wisconsin?
He sure has become one of the chief conspiracy peddlers in the United States government, that's for sure. And most of these are so obviously absurd and ridiculous that it almost isn't even worth talking about. I'm gonna give my own answer and answer E.
Okay.
Are you ready, Pat?
Yes.
I'm gonna say that the conspiracy to get rid of for Ron Johnson is that trickle-down economics works.
Oh, very nice. Okay, that was very well played. And he loves that one, and of course was able to pass that that big old bloated budget bill to prove it. And now we get to careen toward another government shutdown. For all the talk about the Charlie Kirk murder, and of course we will get to that, and Derek Van Orden's reaction and everything else, while we're on the subject of things they could be doing otherwise, I mean, a government shutdown is looming out there. And I would expect, once again, Ron Johnson is probably going to be cheerleader number one for that. He's never seen a government shutdown he didn't like.
Yeah, he always seems to want to be, I guess, more open to this than anything else because he doesn't really actually want to fund a lot of government programs. And so he's always wanting to cut spending. And we got to worry about the debt right until a bill that would massively slash taxes is going to explode the debt. And then he's going to vote for it every single time. I'm interested to see how Democrats play whatever leverage that they might have with this shutdown battle that is looming ahead of us. But we can I think at this point, Ron Johnson, the 15 years that we've seen of him in office, we can kind of expect how he's going to operate in these types of scenarios, can't we?
Yes, we do. We definitely have a look at that. All right, let's take a break from Congress. We've talked so much about Van Orden. We will get back to it. But we had, you know, some more recent news with yesterday's entry into the governor's race of State Senator Kelda Royce. She's a frequent guest here on Civic Media on all the various shows, and got into the race to, you know, surprising nobody. She's run for office before, but, you know, for whatever reasons, picked this week to launch her campaign. Tell us a bit about what we think we can expect from Senator Kelda Royce and how the Democratic primary contest is starting to shape up. What do you think of it?
Yeah, these announcements are ramping up after Labor Day. We were talking about in the summer that some of these candidates who said, yes, I'm planning to run, I'm planning to announce, and we talked about how that's probably not going to happen right in the middle of August when people are maybe not paying as much attention to the political news cycle. Once they get back to school, back to, you know, the regular fall news cycle, that we expect some of these to ramp up. So we had David Crowley last week we were talking about on this show, and then this week, Kelda Royce. I imagine we're going to get more announcements in the coming days and weeks as well. But Kelda Royce, I think, you know, obviously she ran in 2018 for governor, you know, didn't make it out of the Democratic primary, but had a pretty strong showing. And then I think, you know, one of the things that I really have been impressed by with Kelda Royce is the job that she has done in the state Senate and on the Joint Finance Committee. You know, she in the period in between gubernatorial runs, I guess you could say, she has really gotten a whole lot better as a politician. I think she's really gotten better as a legislator, you know, speaks to a lot of these issues. She's had a lot of really standout moments in the Joint Finance Committee and things like that. And I think that, you know, she's in her second term as a state senator representing the 26th district in Madison. And I think that is going to help her in this campaign, in her prospects for winning a primary, because I think the work that she has done since 2020, since she has been on in the state Senate on Joint Finance Committee, there's a lot to point to that she's been able to accomplish. And I think she can also speak to, you know, just the challenges that reside in the halls of the Wisconsin State Legislature in the Republican controlled, you know, Senate and Assembly that has dominated state politics for the better part of the last 15 years. So, you know, I'm interested to see what type of endorsements she might pick up over the course of this. You know, she having a lot of work on reproductive rights in her background, I do imagine that some of those groups will be getting behind her in this. But I'm interested to see which other, you know, which other state legislators, which other community leaders, other groups might be endorsing her in this run, and where some of those groups are lining up, and what is going to shape up to be a pretty crowded primary, I think.
Yes, it is. And yes, you're absolutely right that some of these groups will get a lot of scrutiny. I'm sure they're feeling a lot of pressure from one candidate or another to say, look, you know, I'm your favorite. You know, I've done more for you than anybody else. And some groups will endorse. And I'm sure there'll be some other groups that say, you know, there's multiple good candidates. We will just wait and help you in the general, which is really what no candidate wants to hear when you're in a crowded primary field. You want to get whatever extra dollars or door knockers that you can possibly handle. However, you've got what we said was going to be happening here. You've got a primary now for governor in both parties. You're going to have a primary in some of these other seats. We had Jocasta Zamarripa on yesterday running for Secretary of State. There is already another Democrat, I believe, a young man from the Stevens Point area who is in the race. We talked to Emily Berge earlier today, one of three Democratic candidates in the 3rd Congressional District. We're going to have candidates running in multiple candidates running in primaries in various legislative races. We're going to probably have story about another one tomorrow in the 17th Senate District here. So, Dan, never mind the candidates. We always say candidates, just get used to it. There's going to be a primary. Now we got to talk to voters and get them used to the idea that, you know, you really got to pay attention and you really got to go vote come August.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I see as primaries being a benefit to Democrats in this election cycle. One is, I think Democrats have avoided primaries to their detriment, I think, to a certain extent in the past. And I think there is this iron sharpens iron quality that can come from having a competitive primary. If you're tested in the primary, that's going to have you more ready for the general election. And I think we've seen a number of examples of that over the years. And I think that is one piece of it. But another piece, too, I think speaks to the changing media environment that we all live in. And I think part of what is so what the Trump and MAGA Republicans have understood in ways that Democrats have not is that we are living in an attention economy now, and we need to get people's attention. And that is a real competition. And I think, you know, Republicans are very good at getting people's attention. They're not very good at governing, but they're very good at getting people's attention. And I think primaries in this sense can get people's attention. If there is competition here, if people are like choosing their candidate or rooting for their person or wanting to see a debate or whatever it might be, I think there is a benefit to that that would get people looking at what Democrats are doing and saying in ways that they might not be able to break through otherwise. And I think these primaries that we are could be having this year, next year in Wisconsin, you know, I don't love that our primary is in August. I wish it was part of the April spring election. That's perhaps a conversation for another time. But I think that there is a lot to be gained from a primary. And I think in Wisconsin, you're right, we're going to be looking at a lot of state Senate primaries, congressional primaries, and then all of the statewide office holders going through, and all of that. We're going to have governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and maybe state treasurer even has a primary. Who knows? But I think these can be a very good thing for Democrats.
And we still don't know what Josh Call's going to do.
So we don't know what Josh Call's going to do. That's
primary,
right.
Primary for attorney general. Alicia notes on YouTube, there's a primary in the 8th Congressional District on the Democratic side for the first time in a while as well. And so, again, this is just the nature of a primary, though. And one of the potential drawbacks is that there will be people who, you know, they all want a fighter, and they're, you know, at the risk of almost running a purity test. And to that end, there was an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel all about Scott Walker's reaction to the Charlie Kirk assassination, and talking about, you know, the security for, you know, conservative activists, and quoted in there, I heard from somebody else, they were really unhappy that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, who's running for governor, had a quote on WISN where he said, "We need to stop the violent political rhetoric on both sides of the aisle." When he asked if some Republicans about Republicans suggesting some Democrats are to blame, Crowley said, "It's unfortunate that we're literally pointing the finger at partisanship. We shouldn't be focusing on what political beliefs people have on who to blame when it comes down to this." And again, that may be the right things in the moment, but there were definitely people unhappy that he both sides a quote about, you know, violent political rhetoric on both sides, when, you know, the record does not indicate that that is so.
You're right. The record does not indicate, but I tend to agree with the Milwaukee County Executive on this point. And I think we need to celebrate the leaders who are looking to calm things down and have a rational conversation about things. And I do think, yes, we can say that there has been more violent rhetoric coming from the right, but I think we would be wrong to say that it is only coming from the right. I think we do need to recognize that there are certain problems on the left as well. And I think we need to recognize that and not overlook it in this conversation, too. I think there are pieces that we need to, you know, we ran this piece at the Recombobulation Area last week from Emily Cephos, talking about how so much of the reaction that we've seen since Charlie Kirk's death has been amounted to this trying to score points in this endless online game. I think we just need to stop running around in circles about this. And just, you know, I think we all need to grieve collectively that political violence in America is on the rise, and it is a bad thing, and we need to condemn it, and it needs to stop.
Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, is with us. We will get into Derek Van Orden's reaction, the ongoing stream of obscenities and threats as part of it. And, of course, we'll get into girls basketball coaching as well. Still some more final news and notes here from Lake Wasota coming up on the Civic Media Radio Network.
as Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Hunters, beware what you eat. Wisconsin health officials have issued a new consumption advisory for ducks harvested on Green Bay. Testing shows mallard and wood ducks on the bay are contaminated with toxic PFAS forever chemicals. UW-Madison researchers have linked contamination in the bay to Tyco fire products near Marinette. A key research center on the Mississippi River is falling prey to big federal cuts targeting science. The French Island facility, known as an ecosystem research area, produces information on water quality, invasive species, wildlife diseases, and more. Heavy cuts to the program take effect on October 1st and could effectively eliminate more than a century of scientific research. Knowledge is power. Right now on the Defender podcast, $150 million is available to help Wisconsinites upgrade their homes and cut energy use. Learn how to get started at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mornings on WFHR.
A crash that covered an interstate in boxes of mozzarella cheese.
Oh, no.
Oh.
So this is one of those things that if it happened in front of me, God help me that there's a rational, smart adult next to me that tells
see
me,
going in, James, like, sticking James, boxes of
yes,
the mozzarella.
James, you leave that where it is. Yeah. You leave that where that is, James. It's free mozzarella. I immediately turned into my father.
Mozzarella gate.
Weekdays from 9 to 11 on WFHR.
Hi, my name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm also the author of a new book, Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. This summer proved to all of us that climate change is real and it is deadly. And I'm here to tell you that a small group of billionaires are making it worse. Did you know that billionaire Jeff Bezos' wife, Lauren Sanchez, emitted more carbon in her 11-minute Blue Origin space flight than the average person emits in a lifetime? Did you know that the average super yacht produces as much carbon emissions as 1,500 regular vehicles? And that private jets emit 10 to 20 times more pollutants per passenger than commercial airplanes? So who should pay for climate change? People like you who recycle and turn off the lights when you leave the room, or billionaires who take joyrides in space? Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful. It's the least that you can do.
What you desire. Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Tomorrow on the program, we've got Bryn Horton from the Wisconsin Public Education Network talking about what kinds of education-related bills are hanging out at the state capitol looking for action now that the state budget bill is done. Some would do some good, some not so much. But also tomorrow, we will have State Representative Francesca Hong, who's been teasing that she has some kind of an announcement to make tomorrow, and Corrine Hendrickson. Corrine has been on the show many times from New Glarus talking about the issue of child care. And she, too, says there's an announcement that she wants to make tomorrow. So a very busy day coming up on the program. Jim and Appleton on the text line says, yep, unilateral disarmament again. When, oh, when will the Democratic Party and all of its pundits play the game they are in and not the one they wish they were in? I've been waiting for 40 years now. Jim, we appreciate that. You can text us through the Civic Media app anytime and use the voice note feature as well. Let's bring Dan Schaefer back in, founder of the Recombobulation Area and political editor for Civic Media. And we were all set to talk about Cap Time's Idea Fest last week anyway. You talked to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who was one of the speakers last week. Now comes the breaking news that Governor Tim Walz has decided he will run for a third term as Minnesota governor, which will not be a slam dunk for him. There are some headwinds for him in Minnesota, but what was your conversation like, Dan, with the Minnesota governor?
Well, it was at Cap Time's Idea Fest. He sat down on stage on Friday night with John Nichols from the Cap Times to speak about, you know, his run as VP and a whole host of other things. And while discussing that, he did touch on his political future as well. There was a question about that, asking about running for re-election, and Tim Walz said that he's going to make a decision soon and notes that no one has ever won a third term as Minnesota governor. And he said, it sure doesn't seem like now is the time to leave the field with all that's going on. So not surprised at all to see today that our neighbor to the west is our friend Tim Walz is running for a third term after some of those comments that he made there. And overall, I thought it was a really interesting discussion. You know, he's obviously had a pretty unique perspective on political violence this summer, given what has happened to one of his closest political allies, Melissa Hortman, when she was assassinated along with her husband in their home. And he talked a lot about the different reactions nationally to that assassination and the one that we saw last week with Charlie Kirk. And I think there was he talked a little bit about how some of the different reactions, how there is not a shared humanity in mourning some of these losses the way that there should be. And I think the governor is right to point that out.
Without a doubt. And of course, the ongoing story of Congressman Derek Van Orden's reaction continues to loom out here simply because, again, of its sheer recklessness and the appearance, again, of a member of the government wanting to infringe on people's First Amendment rights. You look at the rest of the congressional delegation, probably more so than I do, of all the other Republicans. Is anybody even approaching Derek Van Orden in terms of the vile language, the invectives, the obscenity, the threats, anything like that?
I think it really, you know, I think Tom Tiffany, to a certain extent, has, you know, continued the type of rhetoric that we've seen from him. But I don't think it's come close to reaching I was going to say heights, but I suppose I should say depths of what Derek Van Orden has been saying over the past few days. He is really in his own category. And I think it goes to show that he is, you know, he is more of an outlier than anybody else in this. Like, I think there are more people talking about wanting to, you know, calm down the rhetoric and take down the temperature and all of these different things. And I think Van Orden has been the outlier in going the other direction. But at the same time, there's also, you know, it doesn't seem to be anybody on his side telling him, hey, maybe cool it with, you know, several hundred tweets a day about, you know, whatever witch hunts or, you know, the types of things that he's been talking about on his Twitter feed. I'm still going to call it Twitter. I think it's problematic, but it's also just like, is he actually going to do anything about this, or is he just like saying stuff? And I think that's the real divide with Van Orden, because he's not a particularly active legislator.
No. And so, I mean, it would be a full-time job just to try to follow up on every single one of these threats to defund this person, this group, this city. And so consequently, you realize he's wasting time. He's wasting his time. He's wasting our resources, which, you know, again, is par for the course, but really gives you insight into the character of the man. Brewers clinched a playoff spot over the weekend. They are looking really hard to get past whatever first round of the playoffs they happen to be in. Are we feeling good about that, or are we careening toward the postseason, you know, with a sense of nervousness given our past?
I mean, if you don't have a sense of nervousness going into the playoffs, you're not a Milwaukee Brewers fan. But you know, we're hoping to host a lot of home games here in Milwaukee for the playoffs coming up. So I hope they're able to get, you know, the home field advantage. Hope they're able to win that division. Let's get that bullpen healthy. I'm a little bit worried about some of the injuries that they've had in that bullpen. We need a good bullpen. Good, healthy bullpen going into the playoffs. And I think, if anything, about the Brewers right now, that's what's making me nervous.
Rightly so. And still a little too soon to talk Milwaukee Bucks. So why don't we get to your other favorite basketball team, which is whatever girls basketball team you're going to be coaching. How's it looking, Coach? You got the clipboard ready?
We're getting together for some. Yeah, I'm going to be coaching some girls basketball this year. I have, as many of your listeners may know, a girl dad. I have two daughters, and my oldest of the two is getting interested in some basketball. must be all hundreds of Bucks games that have been on in the background in our house over the past however many years all the time. So I've successfully brainwashed her into being a basketball fan, and now we'll be coaching this fall.
That'll be fun. I'll be looking forward. Kind of like talking to Joseph Becky and Jimmy Koska to hear about the games that are getting coached. So I hope it's a lot of fun and takes your mind off of the news business for a little while here. Dan Schaefer, again, follow him at the Recombobulation Area. Thank you very much for being part of things today, Dan. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Pat. Be well.
All right. And again, it's therecombobulationarea.news is what I meant to say there. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Thanks for being part of our Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you Wednesday morning, bright and early, 6 a.m., right here, back up north.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Hollywood Golden Boy Robert Redford has died.
Raindrops are falling on my head.
He starred in dozens of movies, including 1969's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, opposite Paul Newman.
I'll jump first.
Nope. And you jump first.
No, I said.
What's the matter with you?
I can't swim!
In the 70s, Redford starred in All the President's Men and The Way We Were. In 1984, he was an aging baseball phenom in The Natural.
My dad wanted me to be a baseball player.
In 2018, he told CBS Sunday Mornings he didn't watch his own work.
Because I thought, if I look at myself too much, I'm going to be too aware of myself. And that means when I go to do something new, I won't be able to do it without being slightly aware of what I'm doing rather than just being free.
Acting wasn't Redford's only talent. Syracuse University's Robert Thompson.
He goes into the 80s and becomes a director and right off the bat is getting Oscars and Oscar nominations.
He founded the Sundance Film Festival, Redford.